This program is intended for a print impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Science Journal, an audio journal production presenting articles of interest from science magazines, newspapers, and online resources on topics such as technology, health, and the environment. Material selected with the interests of its audience in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. This program is supported in part by the Cognex and UMass Medical School. Our program today will bring you articles from Science Daily, Science News, BBC Sky Magazine, and others. This is David Jaffe, and I will start with Science Daily. They knew the pill was fake, but their memory still improved. A fake pill, even one people knew was fake, gave older adults real boosts in memory, movement, and stress levels after just 3 weeks. Summary. Healthy older adults experience measurable improvements in memory, physical performance, and stress after taking placebo pills for just 3 weeks. The most surprising finding was that the placebo often worked even when participants knew the pills were completely inactive. A placebo or fake supplement may offer real benefits for older adults, according to new research from psychologists at the Universidad Cattolica in Milan. After taking placebo pills for 3 weeks, participants showed improvements in both physical performance and cognitive function. Surprisingly, the benefits were seen even when participants knew the pills contained no active ingredients. The study, published in the International Journal of Clinical and Health Psychology, was led by Diletta Barbiani, Alessandro Antonetti, and Francesco Panini. It was supported by PNRR grants through the Age IT Project. The study is part of an established line of research in which we analyze the role of the mind in aging processes, which is very important, says Panini, full professor of clinical psychology at the Faculty of Psychology at the Università Cattolica, testing the placebo effect in healthy aging. Until now, no research had investigated whether a traditional placebo could influence abilities that naturally decline with age. Our goal, Panini explains, was to clarify whether an open-label placebo therapy, i.e., where the recipient is aware it is a placebo, or a fake supplement, people don't know it's a placebo, could influence psychological, cognitive, and physical functions in older adults living in the community. To explore that question, the researchers recruited 90 healthy older adults and randomly assigned them to one of the three groups. One group received no treatment at all. A second group received placebo pills, but was told the pills contained active ingredients designed to improve well-being and physical function. The third group received the same inactive pills, but was openly informed that the pills were placebos that could still trigger beneficial mind-body responses. Before and after the three-week study, participants completed questionnaires providing information on levels of perceived stress, psychological well-being, sleepiness, fatigue, optimism, self-efficacy, and stereotypes about aging. They also took objective tests measuring short-term memory, selective attention, and physical performance. Memory stress and physical performance improved. After 3 weeks, the participants who knowingly took placebo pills experienced lower stress levels than both the deceptive placebo group and the control group. They also showed significant improvements in short-term memory compared with those who received no intervention. Overall, both placebo groups experienced gains in cognitive and physical performance, although the strongest improvements were generally seen among participants who knew they were taking a placebo. Physical performance increased by 7% in the deceptive placebo group and by 9.2% in the open-label placebo group. Cognitive performance also improved. Depending on the specific test, scores increased by between 12.6% and 14.6% among participants who believed they were taking a real supplement, while those who knowingly took a placebo improved by between 6.9% and 21.5%. These are significant effects, the psychologist emphasizes, comparable to those seen in some experimental studies on physical activity regarding physical performance and cognitive training, especially with regard to memory. Researchers also observed reductions in drowsiness. Stress levels improved most noticeably among participants who were aware they were taking a placebo. A new approach to healthy aging? The findings suggest that placebo treatments can improve several aspects of functioning in older adults, with open-label placebos performing as well as, or in some cases better, than deceptive placebos. According to the researchers, this makes open-label placebos a promising and ethically acceptable strategy for supporting healthy aging. Professor Panini says the results add to the growing scientific evidence that the mind plays an important role in the aging process. Thoughts, emotions, and self-perception may influence not only psychological well-being, but also physical abilities and cognitive function, highlighting the powerful connection between the mind and the body. This article is dated June 25th, 2026. When were dogs domesticated? The oldest known dog DNA offers clues. Genetic studies show a stable dog population throughout the late Upper Paleolithic Eurasia. From Science News by Tom Metcalf, March 25, 2026. Dogs in Europe had been domesticated from wild wolves by at least 14,200 years ago, two new genetic studies suggest. Both studies, published March 25 in Nature, use ancient DNA recovered from fossil dog bones to revise the early history of domestic dogs. The research pushes back the confirmed date for dogs' separation from wolves by more than 3,000 years. The two studies are a significant advance in our understanding how dogs evolved from wolves, says evolutionary biologist Beth Shapiro of the University of California, Santa Cruz, who is not involved in the new work. And they show that living dogs are the result of more than 15,000 years of migrations, interbreeding, and human influence, she says. Dogs were the first animals domesticated by humans, tens of thousands of years before horses, sheep, or cattle, and share many of their genes with wolves. Scientists think dogs evolved from wolves, mainly to be less aggressive to humans, but the exact date of their genetic divergence is not known. A 2015 study estimated that dogs split from wolves between 27,000 and 40,000 years ago based on fossilized wolf bones from Siberia that were radiocarbon dated to about 35,000 years ago. And until now, the oldest confirmed dog remains with preserved DNA found in northwest Russia date to about 10,900 years ago. The researchers in the latest studies examined ancient DNA extracted from over 200 sets of dog and wolf remains at dozens of prehistoric sites across Europe, Southwest Asia, and the Iranian Plateau. The oldest dog in both studies is from the Kesselrock archaeological site in Switzerland, radiocarbon dated to 14,200 years ago during the Paleolithic period. Genetic analysis shows that the Kesselrock dog shared ancestry with Paleolithic dogs from other regions, suggesting dogs were widely established and genetically distinct from wolves by then. The second study examined dog genomes from ancient sites in what are now Turkey, England, and Serbia, and shows that genetically stable dog populations had spread across this region by about 14,300 years ago. Fossilized dog bones from many of the sites also showed consistent genetic signatures, suggesting they belonged to established, stable populations. The researchers don't know if any of these ancient dogs were technically pets of the prehistoric humans who lived at the sites, or if the dogs had just been hanging around the human campsites, says geneticist Anders Bergstrom from the University of East Anglia in Norwich, England. But there is archaeological evidence that at least one of the dogs had been well cared for by humans, which suggests dogs were well-tempered members of their groups, he says. Both studies' findings reinforce the idea that dogs had evolved from wolves between 27,000 and 40,000 years ago, but both refute the idea that dogs in Europe descended independently from European wolves. Instead, the data show these early European dogs shared the same origins as dogs elsewhere and had somehow reached Europe by 14,000 years ago, Bergstrom says. Bergstrom and his co-authors also found traces of Southwest Asian ancestry among some ancient European dogs, which may reflect the migration of farming people from that region into Europe. And the authors of the second study note that the remains of the genetically similar dogs were often found among the remains of genetically dissimilar human groups. The findings suggest that the spread of dogs was linked to the migrations and interactions of the human groups. The latest studies offer further evidence for the idea that dogs had a single origin, possibly somewhere in Asia, with further interbreeding of early dogs and wolves, says Adam Boyko of Cornell University, who has studied dog genetics but wasn't involved in the new studies. Of course, we can't rule out that some early fossils classified as wolves were actually tame and effectively dogs, he says. But from the standpoint of modern dogs, it seems they all share a single domestication origin. The more ancient dog DNA we can study, Shapiro says, the closer we'll get to answering the question of when and where our remarkable partnership with dogs began. How old the universe is and how we know. How do astronomers estimate how old the universe is, and could they be wrong? From BBC Sky at Night magazine by Ezzie Pearson, February 2nd, 2026. The universe is estimated to be 13.8 billion years old, but how do astronomers know how old the universe is, and could they be wrong? The universe began with the Big Bang, sending all the matter and energy of the universe rushing outwards. It is expanding ever since. If we could measure how fast the expansion of the universe is happening, in theory it should be possible to backtrack and work out how old the universe is. Cosmologists think they know the rules of how this rate of expansion has changed over time. But to use these to work out the universe's age, they need the rate of expansion in today's universe, called the Hubble constant. The exact value of the Hubble constant is one of the biggest controversies in cosmology today. Why science disagrees over how old the universe is. There are two methods of measuring the expansion, and they don't quite agree. The first is the late universe method, which looks for standard candles, stellar objects for which we can work out an intrinsic brightness. By comparing that to how bright they appear, we can tell how far away they are. Closest to Earth, astronomers look at Cepheid variable stars, the brightness of which rises and falls every few days in a very predictable way that's closely linked to their true luminosity. For galaxies slightly farther away, astronomers use type 1a supernovae, created when a white dwarf steals stellar material from a companion star. These always have the same mass when they explode, so are all the same brightness. In both cases, astronomers measure how fast these objects were moving away from us by their redshift, where their light is stretched out to longer wavelengths. The faster they're moving, the more the light is shifted. Using both pieces of information together, astronomers have measured the Hubble constant to be around 73 kilometers per second per megaspark, giving the universe an age of around 12.8 billion years. The early universe method, meanwhile, looks at the cosmic microwave background. This is the echo of the Big Bang, laid down when the universe was just 380,000 years old. How the cosmic microwave background appears today depends on many factors, including the Hubble constant. By comparing how the cosmic microwave background looks with various computer simulations, astronomers are able to hone in on the value of the Hubble constant. The most detailed maps of the cosmic microwave background were created by ESA's Planck satellite, which launched in 2009. Using these, cosmologists came up with a Hubble constant of around 68 kilometers per second per megaparsec, giving an age of 13.8 billion years. As this is the only measurement that measures the Hubble constant directly, this is the age most astronomers use. So, what's going on? Exactly what's causing the difference between the calculations as to how old the universe is unknown. Perhaps type 1a supernovae don't work as we think they do, or there's some currently unknown factor affecting the cosmic microwave background, or maybe our assumptions about how the universe works aren't completely correct. To make matters worse, there have been stars in globular clusters that appear to be 14 or even 15 billion years old, older than either age ascribed to the universe. There's still lots of work to be done before we can say for sure how old our universe is. This article appeared in the April 2024 issue of BBC Sky at Night magazine. Great Ape Laughter Reveals a Hidden Origin of Human Speech, from Science Daily, July 1st, 2026. Summary: the rhythm of human laughter appears to have developed evolutionary roots shared with chimpanzees, bonobos, gorillas, and orangutans. That ancient pattern may offer one of the clearest clues yet to how the vocal control needed for human speech gradually evolved. A new study from the University of Warwick suggests that the rhythm of human laughter has remained surprisingly consistent for at least 15 million years. By comparing the laughter of humans and other great apes, researchers uncovered evidence that this ancient vocal pattern may offer valuable clues about how human speech gradually evolved. Humans are not the only primates that laugh. Chimpanzees, bonobos, gorillas, and orangutans all produce laughter. But scientists have long wondered how those vocalizations changed over millions of years and whether they could reveal anything about the origins of human language. To investigate, researchers analyzed laughter recordings from 4 orangutans, 2 gorillas, 3 bonobos, 4 chimpanzees, and 4 humans. Their study, published in Communications Biology, examined 140 separate laugh sequences. Despite the differences between species, the team found a striking similarity. Every species produced laughter with evenly spaced rhythmic intervals between successive sounds. The researchers believe this shared rhythmic pattern originated in a common ancestor that lived around 15 million years ago. They propose that the basic structure has remained remarkably stable throughout the evolution of all living great apes. Dr. Chiara De Gregorio, Honorary Research Associate, Department of Psychology, University of Warwick, said, "How did humans evolve the remarkable ability to speak? Speech leaves no fossils, and complex language exists only in our own species. But we've found a 15-million-year-old clue in an unexpected place, our laughter. Unlike speech, laughter is shared by all living great apes. By comparing how different species laugh, we can see that a basic rhythmic structure has remained unchanged since our last common ancestor. That's extraordinary. Human laughter became more flexible. Although the underlying rhythm appears to have stayed the same, human laughter has become faster, more varied, and far more adaptable than that of other great apes. People can consciously adjust when and how they laugh depending on the situation. A spontaneous laugh triggered by tickling differs from a polite laugh during a meeting, a nervous laugh after making a mistake, or contagious laughter shared among friends. While each serves a different social purpose, they all retain the same basic rhythmic foundation. According to the researchers, this growing ability to control vocal timing likely developed gradually over the course of great ape evolution. That increasing level of vocal control, including over laughter, may have provided one of the essential building blocks that eventually made human speech possible. A window into the evolution of speech. Because spoken language leaves no direct fossil evidence, scientists have few ways to trace its earliest origins. Laughter, however, is evolutionarily much older than speech and remains common to every living great ape, making it a rare opportunity to study how vocal communication evolved. Dr. Adriano Lameria, Associate Professor, Ape Tank, Department of Psychology, University of Warwick, said it's impossible to assess the precursor forms of language directly from our extinct ancestors. Laughter, being evolutionary, older, and having remained shared between all living great apes, provides a rare evolutionary window into the vocal transformations that unfolded across hominid evolution until the first humans appeared on scene. Contrary to the classic notion that the first humans suddenly acquired vocal control capacities remarkably different from their predecessors, laughter evolution tells us that humans lay on a continuum, a prolongation of vocal control capacities that were already being cumulatively honed in for 15 million years. From CNN Science, astronomers discover rare double-ringed odd radio circle in space, by Ashley Strickland, October 14, 2025. An unusual double-ring structure spotted in space with the help of citizen scientists has turned out to be a cosmic rarity. The celestial anomaly, captured by a radio telescope, is an odd radio circle, one of the scarcest and most mysterious objects in the universe said Dr. Ananda Hota, lead author of a study published on October 2nd in the Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society. Odd radio circles, also known as ORCs, likely consist of magnetized plasma, charged gas that is strongly influenced by magnetic fields, and are so massive that entire galaxies reside at their centers. Spanning hundreds of thousands of light years, they often reach 10 to 20 times the size of our Milky Way galaxy. But they are also incredibly faint and usually detectable only through radio light. The newly discovered odd radio circle is the most distant one known to date, located 7.5 billion light years from Earth, and the first discovered by citizen scientists. It's also only the second odd radio circle that has two rings. ORCs are among the most bizarre and beautiful cosmic structures we've ever seen, and they may hold vital clues about how galaxies and black holes co-evolve hand in hand, wrote Hata, an assistant professor at the University of Mumbai's Department of Atomic Energy's Center for Excellence in Basic Sciences, in an email. Odd radio circles were first discovered about 6 years ago, but the structures remain largely elusive. Hata is the director and principal investigator of the RAD at Home Astronomy Collaboratory, an online community open to anyone with a background in science. Astronomers train users to recognize patterns in faint, fuzzy patches of radio waves and analyze astronomical images, Hata explained. The newly discovered odd radio circle appeared in data from the Low Frequency Array, LOFAR, telescope, which is comprised of thousands of antennas in the Netherlands and across Europe to create one large radio telescope. It is the largest and most sensitive radio telescope operating at low frequencies. When RAD at Home participants weren't specifically trained to look for odd radio circles, the unusual double ring structure stood out, marking the first odd radio circle identified using LOFAR. The rings appear to intersect, which researchers believe is just because of our vantage point from Earth, but they are likely separated in space. The pairs span 978,469 light years across. A light year is the distance light travels in 1 year, or 5.88 trillion miles, 9.46 trillion kilometers. This work shows how professional astronomers and citizen scientists together can push the boundaries of scientific discovery, Hata said. Astronomers once thought the odd radio circles might be the throats of wormholes, shock waves from black hole collisions, or merging galaxies, or powerful jets pumping out energetic particles. We suggest that a major explosive event took place in the central galaxy, Hata said. The resulting shock or blast wave could have re-energized ancient clouds of magnetized plasma, making them glow again as radio rings. The plasma clouds were likely first created by jets of material released by the galaxy's supermassive black hole, Hata explained. A new shockwave essentially illuminated smoke left behind by the galaxy's past activity, he added. Black holes don't directly gobble up stars, gas, and dust. Instead, that material falls into a rotating disk around the black hole. As the debris spirals more rapidly, it becomes superheated. The powerful magnetic fields around black holes help channel these energetic superheated particles away from black holes in jets that nearly reach the speed of light. The citizen science team also spotted two additional odd radio circles in two different galaxies, including one located at the end of a powerful jet that has a sharp curve resulting in a radio ring about 100,000 light-years wide. Both odd radio circles are in galaxies that sit within the larger clusters of galaxies, meaning the jets launching from their supermassive black holes interact with surrounding hot plasma that could help shape the radio rings, Hata said. These discoveries show that ORCs and radio rings are not isolated curiosities. They're part of a broader family of exotic plasma structures shaped by black hole jets, winds, and their environments, said study co-author Dr. Pratik Dabad, assistant professor in the astrophysics division of the National Center for Nuclear Research in Warsaw, Poland, in a statement. Ray Norris, an astrophysicist at Australia's Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization, who led the discovery of odd radio circles, was pleased to see a discovery of the phenomenon using the LOFAR telescope and with citizen science. It's difficult to train AI to spot odd radio circles because there are so few known examples, he said. ORCs are really hard to find, but we know there must be hundreds in the data, Norris said. At the moment, citizen science looks like the best approach, and these guys seem to be making a great job of it. Lingering galactic puzzles. The discovery of the most distant odd radio circle to date lets researchers effectively look back in time. The team believes that the phenomenon may serve as a way of recording and preserving ancient violent events that shaped galaxies billions of years ago. The light from the radio circle has traveled for 7.5 billion years to reach Earth and could provide insights into the roles that odd radio circles play in the evolution of galaxies over different timescales, which is not well known. By studying them across different cosmic times, we can begin to reveal how such energetic outbursts influence the surrounding gas and trigger or suppress star formation, Hotteth noted. Our discovery pushes the known boundary of ORCs to nearly half the age of the universe, providing vital clues about their origins and link to the broader life cycle of galaxies. Many questions linger about odd radio circles, including why astronomers only see them at such large sizes. Hotta and Dabad want to know whether these circles expand from smaller bubbles that are undetectable, and if odd radio circles do spring from the mergers of galaxies or supermassive black holes, why aren't they spotted more frequently? The help of citizen scientists and next-generation telescopes like the Transcontinental Square Kilometer Array in South Africa and Australia will be needed to answer such questions. Now under construction and expected to be completed in 2028, the array will include thousands of dishes and up to a million low-frequency antennas to create the world's largest radio telescope. Even though these dishes and antennas will be in two different parts of the world, they will form one telescope with more than 1 million square meters of collecting area, allowing astronomers to survey the entire sky much more quickly than ever before. The SKA and other telescopes in development will be able to observe the odd radio circles in much greater detail, helping astronomers learn more about the evolution of black holes and galaxies. How deep is the deepest part of the ocean? What is the deepest part of the ocean, and can anything live in this extreme environment? From Discover Wildlife, the team at BBC Wildlife Magazine, February 21st, 2025. The deepest part of the ocean is the Challenger Deep, a valley 10,994 meters within the Mariana Trench in the Pacific Ocean. At 6.8 miles, the Challenger Deep is the deepest known point on Earth. The water here exerts a pressure of 1,086 bar, or 15,750 psi, more than 1,071 times the pressure at sea level. Humans have explored the Challenger Deep, a cleft in the ocean floor formed by the boundary of two tectonic plates. Humans have explored the Challenger Deep, a cleft in the ocean floor formed by the boundary of two tectonic plates, as well as two unscrewed descents by remotely operated vehicles, ROVs. There have been several manned descents. The first person to go down alone was film director James Cameron in his submersible. Do any animals live in the Challenger Deep? There are some species that can't survive the harsh conditions of the Challenger Deep. Amphibods that are nearly a foot long have been found there along with strange and saucer-sized single-celled organisms. Mariana Hadal snailfish have been spotted in the Mariana Trench at more than 5 miles below the surface. It's deep enough to swallow Mount Blanc nearly twice, is as long as Colombia, and could produce a deadly, humongous earthquake any minute. The Puerto Rico Trench is almost as deep as the K2 is high and has one of the world's weirdest gravitational pulls. From Discover Wildlife, from the team at BBC Wildlife Magazine, June 14, 2026. At a maximum reported depth of 8,376 meters, the huge Puerto Rico Trench includes one of the deepest points of the Atlantic Ocean. The trench is the boundary of two plates, the Caribbean plate and the North American plate, and has produced earthquakes of a magnitude greater than 8.0. Scientists believe it's possible that the trench can do so again, which would result in a tsunami. Measuring 1,090 miles in length, its deepest point is often called the Milwaukee Deep, which is roughly 8,380 meters deep, just shy of the world's second highest peak, the K2. It was only in 2018 that an explorer went to the deepest point of the trench. Victor Vescovo dived on 19 December and made history. He became the first person to reach the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean and made the second deepest recorded solo dive in history. The dive was part of the Five Deeps expedition, which saw him dive to the deepest points in every ocean. The Puerto Rico Trench runs parallel with the northern coasts of Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic, and it is the deepest part of the Atlantic Ocean. It is about 120 kilometers north of Puerto Rico and is north of the Virgin Islands and was first discovered by the HMS Challenger expedition in 1875. It is a tectonic plate boundary where the North American plate descends under the Caribbean plate. How big is the Puerto Rico Trench? The Puerto Rico Trench is home to what people believe is the world's biggest negative gravity anomaly. This was first discovered in 1671 when a French astronomer noticed that his pendulum clock lost time every day they were in the area of the trench. NASA believes that the reason for the strange gravitational pull is due to a huge, dense mass beneath the trench, which also affects the accuracy of navigational instruments. If you drop an object near the Puerto Rico Trench, it will fall slightly faster than elsewhere on the planet. Wildlife in the Puerto Rican Trench. Because of its depth, the Puerto Rico Trench has been hard to study, and as a result, little is known about the species that live there. The pressure is immense, and many animals cannot survive down there, while those that do struggle to live higher up. Its deepest section is in the Hadal zone, where invertebrates dominate. During diving explorations to the Puerto Rico Trench, scientists spotted swarms of tiny creatures called amphipods alongside what they thought was a sea cucumber. Scooping up the amphipods, they later discovered that they were Scopelochirus schellenbergi, species of amphipod that have only been discovered in deep trenches in the Pacific Ocean. They also identified a small crustacean which was thought to be a member of the Inopsidae family of isopods along a species of cusk eel called Abyssobrelli, which is thought to be the deepest living fish ever captured. For most fish, the intense pressure of the area would destabilize the proteins in their bodies, but cusk eels and other deep-sea fish counteract this by accumulating a protective chemical called trimethylamine in their tissues. What came before the Big Bang? These are the best theories we have about the origin of the cosmos. We explore the theories about one of the most mind-boggling questions about the universe. From BBC Sky at Night magazine by Govert Schilling, February 16, 2026. It's the question that always comes up when thinking about the origin of the universe. What came before the Big Bang? And if there was no before, what was the cause of the Big Bang in the first place? Until a few centuries ago, the answer was easy. Some eternal deity set everything in motion. Even Isaac Newton believed that God created the universe some 6,000 years ago. Later, many scientists, including Albert Einstein, assumed the universe itself to be eternal and everlasting. The beginning of the universe. But when cosmic expansion was discovered, Belgian cosmologist and Jesuit priest Georges Lemaître realized there must have been a beginning, a scientific version of Genesis, so to speak. Not that everyone immediately agreed. Well into the 1960s, Fred Hoyle's steady-state theory was quite popular among iconoclastic scientists as well as laypeople. Hoyle accepted the expansion of the universe, but he didn't believe in the Big Bang. Instead, he assumed that a slow, continuous creation of new matter could keep the average density and the general properties of the universe constant over time. The 1964 discovery of the cosmic microwave background was the major nail in the coffin of steady-state theory. Ever since, supporting evidence for the Big Bang origin of our universe has accumulated to a point where there is hardly any doubt left. Still, no one has a final answer to the question, what happened before the Big Bang? Could there have been a universe before the Big Bang? Most scientists simply ignore the question, as it seems to be too hard a nut to crack. When astronomers talk about a Big Bang, they usually do not refer to the very beginning of the universe, time zero, but to the incredibly hot and compact state of the universe in the first couple of minutes of its existence. To some extent, this is because no one has a real clue about the true nature of time, let alone about the beginning of time. British physicist Julian Barbour, for one, has argued that time doesn't even exist, except as an illusion in our minds. According to others, including Stephen Hawking, time came into existence together with the universe, rendering the whole concept of the word before meaningless. Asking what happened before the Big Bang would be like asking what lies north of the North Pole, or what distance is shorter than zero. Alternative theories. Then again, we simply don't know whether or not there was time before the Big Bang. According to the once popular idea of the cyclic or oscillatory universe, the current expansion of space could one day revert into a contraction, and the resulting Big Crunch could bounce into a new Big Bang, starting the next cycle of an eternal sequence. It's just one of many hypotheses in which our universe is not unique, but part of a possibly infinite multiverse one way or another. And if the multiverse is also infinite in time, we're back to the idea that everything has existed forever, conveniently circumnavigating the nagging question of a beginning. Finally, South African physicist Neil Turok thinks the Big Bang not only spawned our universe, but also an anti-universe composed of antimatter and running backward in time. Again, an intriguing idea, but there's also no chance of confirmation or rejection via observations. In the end, we have to admit we're ignorant about the true beginning of the universe. And even if we lean towards an eternal multiverse with no real beginning at all, we don't know why there is something, or more to the point, why there is everything instead of nothing. This article originally appeared in the June 2023 issue of BBC Sky at Night magazine. Second pregnancy changes the brain in surprising new ways. From Science Daily, July 11th, 2026. Summary. Researchers found that every pregnancy rewires the brain in its own way, with a second pregnancy bringing a different pattern of changes than the first. The discoveries could lead to better ways to recognize and treat maternal mental health challenges, including peripartum depression. A second pregnancy changes the brain in ways that are both familiar and distinct from a first pregnancy, according to a new research from Amsterdam UMC published in Nature Communications. Building on earlier work showing that a first pregnancy reshapes the brain, the researchers found that each pregnancy leaves its own unique imprint on the maternal brain. In an earlier study, Elseline Hoskema and colleagues became the first to demonstrate that pregnancy changes the structure of the human brain. They also showed that pregnancy affects how the brain functions. For this latest research, the team followed 110 women over time. Some were expecting their first child, some were pregnant with their second, others remained childless. By performing repeated brain scans, the researchers tracked how the brain changed throughout the study. With this, we have shown for the first time that the brain not only changes during the first pregnancy, but also during a second, says Hoskema, head of the Pregnancy Brain Lab at Amsterdam UMC. During a first and second pregnancy, the brain changes in both similar and unique ways. Each pregnancy leaves a unique mark on the female brain. Brain networks shift in different ways. The researchers found that a first pregnancy produced the largest changes in the structure and activity of the brain's default mode network, a system involved in self-reflection, social thinking, and other important mental functions. During a second pregnancy, this same network changed again, although to a lesser degree. Instead, the most noticeable changes occurred in brain networks responsible for directing attention and responding to sensory information. It appears that during a second pregnancy, the brain is more strongly altered in networks involved in reacting to sensory cues and in controlling your attention, explains researcher Milou Strathoff, who analyzed the data. These processes may be beneficial when caring for multiple children. Brain changes linked to maternal bonding and mental health. The study also uncovered a relationship between pregnancy-related brain changes and the emotional bond between mother and child. This connection was stronger after a first pregnancy than after a second. Researchers also identified links between structural changes in the brain and peripartum depression during both first and second pregnancies. According to the team, this is the first evidence that changes occurring in the brain's cortex during pregnancy are associated with maternal depression. The timing of these associations differed depending on pregnancy history. Among first-time mothers, they were most apparent after childbirth. For women expecting a second child, they were more noticeable during pregnancy. This knowledge can help to better understand and recognize mental health problems in mothers. It is important that we understand how the brain adapts to motherhood. Understanding the maternal brain. The findings offer new insight into the remarkable adaptability of the maternal brain. Although most women experience one or more pregnancies during their lifetime, scientists are only beginning to understand how pregnancy influences the brain over the long term. The researchers say these discoveries help fill in an important gap in knowledge about women's biology and could eventually improve care for mothers, including efforts to prevent and treat postpartum depression. The study also highlights the brain's remarkable ability to continually adapt to major life experiences such as pregnancy and motherhood. Ex-Google boss may launch a bigger-than-Hubble space telescope within 3 years. Are we about to get a new privately funded space observatory? BBC Sky at Night magazine by Chris Lintott, March 8, 2026. When Yerkes Observatory opened in Wisconsin in 1897, it was a wonder. Alongside the great 1-meter, 40-inch telescope, the largest refractor ever built, the lavish facilities included the novelty of chemical and physical laboratories to support the new science of astrophysics. All this scientific largesse was the gift of Charles Yerkes, a tycoon with a fortune derived in part from building bits of London underground. Private support of even the grandest cutting-edge facilities was the norm, and only after the Second World War did telescopes and, later, space missions like Hubble become so expensive that government support was essential. Today's marvels, from JWST to the Vera Rubin Observatory, are funded mostly by taxes allocated to science agencies. That's just the way it has to be. Or does it? The new private space telescope. A new space telescope has been announced, Lazuli, with a 3-meter, 10-foot mirror capable of observing in the optical and infrared. This makes it larger than Hubble, and it will fly a sophisticated spectrograph and camera, plus a coronagraph for spotting planets around nearby stars. What's really notable is that the entire cost of Lazuli is being covered by Eric and Wendy Schmidt. Eric used to run Google, and they're writing a check for what must easily be hundreds of millions of dollars. The paper claims the team can move faster than a space agency by accepting more risk and using technologies, particularly in camera design, that haven't yet been proven to work in space. Lazuli could be flying, they say, in 3 to 5 years. What Lazuli could find. By then, astronomers will be swimming in alerts for transient events, supernovae, novae, and other short-lived phenomena from the Vera Rubin Observatory and gravitational wave observatories. While Hubble, say, needs at least a few days' notice to swing to a new target, Lazuli will respond to new alerts in under 4 hours, perhaps even within 90 minutes. If Lazuli can swing into action so quickly, it'll play a big role in understanding the formation and evolution of black holes and other exotic objects. It may even help with the Hubble tension crisis in cosmology, where current methods for measuring the speed of expansion of the universe disagree slightly but significantly. The onboard spectroscope is important. Rapidly capturing the spectra of transients like AT201-18COW, a bright, fast-changing explosion caught a few years back, might explain why they remain surprisingly bright in the infrared so long after their initial explosion. Spectroscopy of exoplanet atmospheres, making use of the 3-meter mirror, will help us understand what these new worlds are like. The coronagraph will also allow the discovery of planets in Jupiter-like orbits around nearby stars, paving the way for the next really big taxpayer-funded space telescope, the Habitable Worlds Observatory, which will do the same for worlds in Earth-like orbits. The Roman Space Telescope, due for launch this year, does have a similar instrument on board, but Lazuli's slightly larger mirror, aided by a design that stops the secondary mirror from blocking the primary, has a slight advantage. It's very exciting. If the accelerated schedule is achieved and the risk-taking pays off, astronomers in almost every field will have cause to celebrate a remarkable act of generosity. From CNN Science, scientists reveal earliest evidence for shifting of Earth's crust. From Katie Hunt, updated March 25th, 2026. The puzzle pieces of Earth's rocky crust are slowly and steadily moving, a process known as plate tectonics. These dynamic movements helped to create the habitats and climate that fostered the emergence of life on our planet. But exactly when the geological process first emerged has been a matter of scientific contention for decades. Now, scientists say they have found the earliest direct evidence of plate tectonics on Earth, the only known planet to have the geological process. The findings suggest that the phenomenon was already shaping the planet billions of years ago. Why do you have mountains? Why do you have oceans? It only makes sense with plate tectonics, said Roger Fu, a professor of Earth and Planetary Sciences at Harvard University, who led the research for a new study that was published in the journal Science on March 19th. So, trying to understand when it happened on Earth is a fundamental question. It makes everything else make sense, he said. Today, Earth's 7 major and 8 minor plates, which are on average 125 kilometers, about 80 miles, thick, move at a steady rate of several centimeters per year. Each plate is in motion, either pulling away from or growing closer to its neighbors, and volcanic activity and earthquakes typically cluster at these margins. Some in the scientific community contend that plate tectonics began 4.4 billion years ago, while others suggest they only started in the last 1 billion. Whether modern plate tectonics arose directly from the hellish magma ocean that once covered early Earth, or whether intermediate stages, such as plates that moved intermittently or one single unbroken lid, were at play is also unclear, the study authors noted. The latest research reveals the plates were shifting as early as 3.5 billion years ago, during the Archean eon, when the planet was already home to early microbial life. In pushing back the timeline for active tectonic plates, the analysis could offer clues about Earth's early history and the conditions that supported early life, according to the study. Rocks capture Earth's early history. Fu and his colleagues analyzed rock samples from the East Pilbara Craton, a geological formation rich with fossil evidence of early organisms such as stromatolites in Western Australia's Pilbara region. If you don't get too close, it actually looks like really friendly, beautiful scenery because it's got these low rolling hills, but once you start walking around, you realize it's full of very spiky grasses with sharp tips, he said. For their study, Fu and his colleagues harnessed a phenomena called paleomagnetism. Magnetic minerals within the rock record the inclination of Earth's magnetic field lines at the moment they form, allowing scientists to infer the rock's original orientation and latitude. Our job was to basically measure these grains and see what the magnetic alignment of these rocks was, Fu said. You can take the angle between the observed magnetic field direction and the horizontal, and you can say you are near the poles or you are near the equator, he explained. By analyzing 900 rock samples collected from the Pilbara that represented a 30-million-year time frame, the team found that part of the formation shifted in latitude from 53 degrees to 77 degrees, a drift of tens of centimeters annually over several million years, and rotated clockwise by more than 90 degrees. The researchers also assessed existing paleomagnetic data from the Barberton Greenstone Belt in South Africa, which was nearly stationary at a lower latitude during roughly the same period, according to the study. By looking at the two sites, it was clear that the lithosphere, which comprises the Earth's crust and the uppermost mantle, was not a big unbroken shell across the globe, as a lot of people have argued before. Lead author Alec Brenner, a postdoctoral associate at Yale University, said in a news release. Brenner conducted the research as a doctoral student in the Department of Earth and Planetary Sciences at Harvard University. Instead, it was segmented into different pieces that could move within respect to each other. The findings are highly significant, mainly because they represent a huge amount of high-quality paleomagnetic data that's uncommon for such old rocks, said Uwe Kirchner, a research fellow at Curtin University in Australia, who was not involved in the study. The important outcome from the research, we noted, was the indication of relative motion, with data revealing movement in the Pilbara Craton and the Barberton Greenstone Belt largely remaining stationary. This is crucial evidence of how Earth transitioned towards the plate tectonics world, he said. Neanderthals used rhinoceros teeth as tools. The teeth of extinct rhinos found in Spain and France were likely used to shape stone tools. From Science News, May 6, 2026, by Javier Barbuzano. Neanderthals may have had an unexpected tool in their kits, rhinoceros teeth. Marks in fossil rhino teeth found in caves in France and Spain suggest they were once used as multi-purpose heavy-duty tools. A new study reveals that these ancient hominids used the massive molars for shaping stone tools and processing all sorts of materials, such as vegetable fibers or hides. Rhinos no longer roam wild in Europe, but about 100,000 years ago, Neanderthals coexisted with several species, including the narrow-nosed rhinoceros. The new research, published in the May Journal of Human Evolution, suggests that rhinoceros teeth were versatile tools that these hominids used for a variety of purposes, exploiting their hardness, robustness, and durability. Archaeologists have long known that Neanderthals used animal remains, such as bones and antlers, as hammers or retouchers to keep their stone tools sharp. But few studies have looked at teeth. Intrigued by several teeth that had unexpected markings on them, Alicia Sanz Royo and colleagues surveyed a dozen archaeological sites in France and Spain. In Spain's El Castillo and France's Peche de l'Aze, they found teeth with grooves, notches, sliding marks, and scrapes, which suggested repeated hitting. Microscopic analysis of the teeth showed that these markings were not caused by chewing or other natural damage before or after death. Using modern rhino teeth from zoological reserves, the researchers reenacted tasks Neanderthals might have regularly performed, such as using the teeth as hammers to sculpt stone tools and as anvils for cutting vegetable fibers and leather. The experiments damaged the modern teeth in very similar patterns to the damage observed in the fossils. Despite the significant weight and bulk of the rhino molars, up to 380 grams in some cases, the experimenters found them surprisingly effective. Larger teeth with flatter surfaces were the most comfortable to use, the researchers report, providing a stable and durable platform for precision tasks. Based on the type of tooth that bore the marks, the researchers think that Neanderthals were selective, choosing teeth with the right size or shape for the job at hand. I had never found teeth with these types of marks. At first, I was quite skeptical, says Sanz Royo of the University of Aberdeen in Scotland. This study is important because it opens the possibility that, in addition to bones and antlers, teeth, which are super hard material, were also very useful. The new discovery adds a dimension to our understanding of Neanderthal cognitive complexity. With 202 rhino teeth found at the El Castillo cave alone, 25 of them with use marks, their finding hints at an intentional behavior that goes beyond the merely opportunistic. As anthropologists continue to investigate Neanderthal lifestyles, the full extent of Neanderthal cognitive abilities is a matter of heated debate. Some researchers are finding increasingly compelling evidence that suggests Neanderthals possessed symbolic thought, a trait once considered exclusive of modern humans. This study shows that Neanderthals not only ate the animals, but they utilized their remains for their technology, says archaeologist Jose Ramos Munoz of the University of Cadiz in Spain, who was not involved in the new study. It's a trait of modernity. Scientists may have found a way to mimic sleep in the brain without actually sleeping. Here's how. Researchers recreated a deep sleep brain rhythm in awake mice, giving them some memory benefits usually linked to actual rest. From Vice Media, June 14, 2026, by Luis Prada. Sleep is great, but you know what's even better? Not sleeping. Sometimes it feels like a glaring design flaw that we have to power down for 6 to 9 hours a day just to keep the brain from frying. Now, according to a new study published in Nature Neuroscience, scientists may have found a way to give us all the benefits of sleep without actually going to sleep. Researchers at the University of Wisconsin-Madison used optogenetics, a technique that controls genetically modified brain cells with pulses of light, to recreate the brain rhythm of deep sleep in mice that were fully awake and moving. As we are in deep sleep, our neurons fire in slow, synchronized patterns. They burst, then they go quiet, rinse and repeat until you wake up. That rhythm is thought to help reset synaptic connections and consolidate our memory. But what if you could synthesize that rhythm while never actually falling asleep? Scientists may have found a way to mimic sleep in the brain without actually sleeping. The team implanted tiny fiber optic cables into the mice's brains and stimulated one hemisphere while leaving the other side untouched as a control. They kept the mice awake to make sure they were extra sleepy, then induced a sleep-like rhythmic pulse in one hemisphere of the brain. When the mice were fully allowed to sleep normally, the stimulated side showed signs that it had already gotten a good chunk of the rest it needed. The rhythm itself is the key factor here. In a separate experiment, the researchers suppressed brain activity without providing alternating bursts, just silence and calm, and yet it didn't produce the same restorative effect. The silence and calm didn't matter. The only thing that made a difference was that pulsating pattern. The real test, however, was a matter of memory. Sleep-deprived mice performed worse on learning tasks, meaning their memories were affected by a rough night of sleep. But mice that stayed awake while receiving the artificial sleep rhythm performed just as well as the fully rested mice. Even the molecular markers in their brain mirrored the changes typically seen after a good night of natural sleep. The researchers made it clear that this isn't a shortcut to skip bedtime altogether. The process requires genetic engineering and implanting electrodes in the brain, which are not exactly practical. Besides, they argue that natural sleep probably does a way better job at recharging the brain, and it does it at more evenly across the entire brain. But still, the findings were notable in that they identified the specific electrical signal that triggers restorative sleep, and they've shown that it's possible to approximate at least some of sleep's effects by simulating that pattern. Maybe that leads to further advances in sleep science down the line. For now, it's just cool. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you'd like a hard copy of our program, schedule either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm David Jaffe. Thank you for listening.